Hello again and welcome back. And once again, I'd like to remind our listeners that we are moving this program to a new time slot on Monday, and that's going to be from noon to 1 o'clock. And we're doing that to really make it more convenient for you, the listener, to listen to the entire program, part of a series of program changes that we'll be discussing on St. Louis on the Air on Thursday, by the way. For those of you who listen at night, there'd be no change to our 10 o'clock time for the repeat broadcast of St. Louis on the Air. But again, we are moving the program from 11 to noon to noon to 1 o'clock starting this coming Monday. We hope you will be with us then. Well, the vacation season is upon us, and by now most people have their vacation plans set. It's become a modern routine. Well, it wasn't always so, but our Missouri ancestors, some of them anyway, got the ball rolling well over 100 years ago. They looked north at summertime cottage resorts. I think probably all of us understand why they would do that. Joining me in studio is Douglas Scott Brooks, author of Up North, St. Louis Summer Colonies on Lake Huron in the Golden Age of Travel. So nice to have you with us, Douglas.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What got you onto this particular subject?
Well, I've been going every summer of my life to this resort area on southern Lake Huron in Michigan. It's an old family cottage built by the family in 1895, and we're still there. And one day I was puttering through drawers, and I came across a diary that my great-grandmother had written and kept from 1911 to 1915. So I was just reading it in her old handwriting and thought, well, that's interesting. Maybe I'll start transcribing it. And so I did. I typed it up and put it away. But then I was thinking about it because there's so many things I don't know about this whole area. How did it get started? And all these stories from my dad, my grandmother, my family's been going there since the 1890s. And I didn't know anything about it except that there were a lot of St. Louis families who went up to this part of Michigan. So I started to do research. And then 7 years later, it turned into this book after going through quite a bit of effort to put it all together.
I think it's no secret as to why people during the summertime in St. Louis would want to head north and preferably to some water. But why this particular area, Port Huron on Lake Huron?
Well, it started as a resort of rented cottages for people from anywhere, really, but mostly from Ohio, Columbus, and Cincinnati. And I don't know. I've been trying to find out how St. Louis got started, except that, you know, in 1900, St. Louis was the fourth largest city in the country. It was a very rich city. There were lots of people who had the means and the time to get out of town in the summer, which is exactly when you wanted to escape. And in my own family, well, my grandmother, my grandmother had five children in 5.5 years, and she shouldn't have to spend the summers in the heat of St. Louis. So they got out, and it's just started with a few families from St. Louis. And I think really from word of mouth, it then spread to where St. Louis became the queen of the Lake Huron beaches. It was predominantly St. Louisans up there. And in fact, there was through train service, there was direct sleeping cars. So you would board your sleeping car at Union Station, and you didn't even have to wake up till you were in Michigan because it was transferred to another train in Chicago. You didn't have to change.
If it weren't for the trains, this probably would not have happened when it happened.
You're right. This was a combination of several factors that got this resort started. And I should say the book isn't – it's about these two resorts, but it's because these two places are really microcosms for the whole story of how Americans began to take summer vacations in the 1800s. So Americans had always been doing summer vacations, but only the wealthy class before the Civil War. But after that, the middle class began to evolve and had enough money and had enough leisure time, and women did not work by and large, certainly in that class, and so they could escape for the whole summer. And that's how summer vacationing began to expand, because originally the word vacation just meant period of holiday from school, but then that got morphed into this concept of going away for the summer.
What was life like for these folks on the edge of Lake Huron?
It was a real escape. It was an escape because back in St. Louis, you might live in a nice stone house with all the indoor plumbing amenities and so on in the 1880s. But you wanted to get out of that. And so these were very simple cottages, one-story cottages, right overlooking the lake, wooden, everything of wood, a porch, a parlor, some bedrooms, and that's it. No kitchen, because you would take your meals in the dining hall that was also at this resort, which is called Huronia Beach. Mm-hmm. That started in 1880. In 1885, just north of Huronia, immediately north, another resort began called Gratiot Beach, named after Gratiot Avenue, ultimately a St. Louis connection because Charles Gratiot from St. Louis, and he designed and built the fort that the Americans built at the southern end of Lake Huron. So it was named after him. But people coming from St. Louis 100 years later didn't know that, I'm sure.
And what did they do to recreate? I mean, that was what they were there for. They certainly more than just swimming in the lake.
Swimming in the lake was number one.
Yep.
And I have a chapter in the book called The Beckoning Lake that talks all about all the various activities people came up with to swim in the lake and boating in the lake. And there was all kinds of boating accidents that would occur and drownings and so on. But that was the downside that I actually talk about that in the book. Besides being in the lake, then a whole host of amenities started to develop. And the owner of the resort Huronia Beach, where people rented their cottages, he finally got the idea that he had to start providing amenities because you wouldn't want to just come someplace and sit around, which is what he did the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. So he began to put in things like a billiard parlor. There was a merry-go-round for the kids. He had a racetrack, and there was dancing in the evenings. There was a dancing hall. And then he began to bring in acts. So there would be Chautauqua acts, visiting lecturers. There were musical acts. And then the resorters themselves would put together all sorts of things and ways that they would spend their evenings, including going to many different kinds of parties.
Well, good. sounds like a fun time. Were they more social up there at this cottage society than they might have been back home?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I think one of the great draws of getting out of town and just going away for the summer was the chance to escape from yourself and escape from your routine, whether it was housework or school or going to work. So to me, that's one of the great draws of summer vacations, is to try something different, to stretch the rules a bit of society. So at these summer resorts, men and women could interact with each other much more than they did at home typically. And often we find women engaging in games with men that they probably wouldn't at home, even basketball and baseball, these sorts of things. So it was a way to stretch the rules a bit. And being on a beach, well, if you've ever been on a beach, you know, wearing a swimsuit to a beach, it's kind of an act of courage, as I say in the book. And I even point out how wearing a swimming suit is a real way to sort of stretch society's rules a bit. And that's certainly out
of course, the swimsuits of the day that we're talking about, 1890, were certainly not very revealing.
They weren't. For ladies, they covered up. They were like dresses. They came down below the knees. And ladies always wore stockings in the water. The sleeves of the arms were short but came right up to the collar, so everything was covered up because this thing about getting a suntan, that's only strictly 20th century. Before World War I, a proper lady was not to have a suntan. She was supposed to have porcelain-like skin that was not tan, and so the idea was to stay covered up. And this whole thing of lying on the beach getting tan was total novelty. Nobody in their right mind throughout human history before the 1880s or so thought at all about spending the time on the beach.
You know, the time of your book, the book covers, is roughly 1870 or a little after that into about 1950. When was the actual, really the heyday of this place?
This place on Lake Huron got started in 1880, and then next door to Gratiot Beach is where people could buy their own cottages, so not renting. So you could stay the whole summer in your own cottage. That started in 1885. And that's really when Michigan began to take off as a destination because entrepreneurs quickly got the idea, say, let's make something of our beaches. We've got farmlands, yes, we have timber, but what can we do with all these beaches? And then somebody quickly realized the weather was good. Let's attract people from the big cities of the Midwest and have them come. And so between 1890 or so and 1915, this was the real heyday for St. Louis when it was, as I mentioned, they were the queen of St. Louis beaches. After 1915 or so, Detroit really started to boom, and that's when Detroiters began to replace the St. Louisans. But still, even today, we have St. Louisans going up to this part of eastern Michigan. Many St. Louisans also went to western Michigan along the shores of Lake Michigan, Wequitansing and Petoskey, Saugatuck, and even still do today. It is closer to St. Louis a little bit, but as I mentioned, there's through train service, so these others would go over to Eastern Michigan.
You mentioned Detroit, and in a sense, that was part of the undoing in another way, because once the automobile became prominent, as it did, and even later on airplanes, that took people to their vacations to other places.
That is really what hastened the end of these typical summer resorts, not just in Michigan, but all over the country, that once you could drive, once cars evolved to be relatively reliable and there were good enough roads, so starting in the 20s, then why plunk down for a whole summer at one resort? And certainly in the 50s, when you could start to fly to, say, Europe or wherever, then that was pretty much the end. Topping that off is, of course, that after World War II, the Depression really finished off a lot of these resorts. And after World War II, women began more and more to enter the workforce. And so mother wasn't available all summer to take the kids off. And so it was quite rare that you'd have these families being able to just take off for the whole summer. And that was pretty much the end.
Did it have to be for the whole summer? What happened to the two-week vacation?
The two-week vacation is somewhat modern. I have some statistics in the book I compiled from the local town newspaper, and they show how long people stayed at these resorts. Now, we're talking, say, 1890 through 1915. And in that period, the vast majority of people stayed for either 6 weeks or 8 weeks. How many people could do that today? Very few,
sure.
Right? People are working.
Dad stayed throughout?
Dad did not. Yeah. Dad came up for maybe the two-week thing, and he stayed down here in St. Louis or wherever and was slaving away at the job. But typically then, Dad would just come up for 2 weeks. Even my own family, our dad would just come up for a couple of weeks.
I want to get our listeners into the conversation. Perhaps some folks out there are familiar with the area that we're talking about, Port Huron, perhaps spend some time there or have some recollections or family stories about it. Come on in. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or tweet at STL on air. What did it cost to spend 4 weeks or 8 weeks up there?
These were targeted at the middle class, so it's always confusing talking about money from back then, how it compares to today. I have the figures there, the dollar figures, but to just talk about it in general terms, these resorts, and most in Michigan, were aimed at the middle class, the upper middle and the middle. So the really high-end resort in Michigan is the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island, and it's still operating. It's a beautiful place. Maybe you've been there. That was about twice as expensive as these resorts, and certainly the meals, again, about twice the cost. There was also a high-end hotel downtown in Port Huron, and that charged about 30% more than these resorts charged. So they were aiming themselves strictly at the middle class, not the cheapest, but the middle class. And there were all kinds of summer resorts. There were very religious resorts, Bible study and so on. There were resorts where alcohol was forbidden. There were resorts where everything was allowed. This resort, like most, I think, in the United States, aimed itself toward the middle group, toward what was called respectable. What respectable means is mostly that families and single ladies, families with children and single ladies, could come there and feel comfortable.
When you say everything was allowed, what do you mean?
Well,
how far can we take this?
Probably not as much as we'd like, but I haven't looked into what exactly they did at those sorts of resorts, except that it was, there's probably a lot more going on under the surface than we realize. But certainly alcohol was not sold, by the way, at these resorts, at the dining hall. You couldn't – booze was out of the question. But it was not a religious resort, so it encouraged families to come. And there was a beach chapel. In fact, my great-uncle, great-great, was the minister at it. But it was more relaxed than those sorts of – so it was a whole spectrum of things.
How did the townspeople react to this influx of people from St. Louis and Cincinnati and Columbus?
Yeah, I looked into that because I've wondered – my whole life I've been in this town in the summer. And you might think that it would be kind of a love-hate relationship because here are these folks with means coming into town – taking up the good space on the beach. It was private. The townsfolk were not allowed. And then when the weather started to get nasty, they took off. And that was the end of that. but I've never come across any bad references in letters or newspapers talking about the townsfolk, with one exception, and that's where Cupid's bow is concerned. If there was any chance of rivalry, in fact, one of the columns from 1945 in the town newspaper says, well, thank goodness, girls, those town boys have left for the summer. We always were nervous that our boyfriends would be much more interested in these fancy girls coming up from St. Louis. But it didn't happen, and they ended up marrying us after all. Well, actually, that's not true, because I have quite a few instances of people from St. Louis marrying the locals. Girls and boys would both marry some of those folks.
Which tends to happen in environments like this, needless to say. What is the status of Gratiot and the other beach today?
The Huronia Beach, which is the one with the rental cottages, closed in 1919. For the reasons I talked about, it's just really hard, as you can understand, to make a living when you can only be open 3 or 4 months out of the year. It was okay in the 19th century. It worked because wages were so low, but nowadays it didn't. So it closed, and all the cottages were razed or moved off. Gratiot Beach next door soldiered on, and it is still going, although most of the old cottages have now been converted into winter homes. There's just a few of us hangers-on. I look at it as sort of like nomads going into a summer pasture where there's a bunch of natives. But
So you're still going up there?
Yes, indeed. Still do go up there.
Tell us what, you describe what life was like then. Describe a little bit how it's the same and how maybe it's different today.
It's interesting because my sister and I now share our cottage. We're the fifth generation of the family to be there. And as soon as you open the back door and go in, there's a certain scent or aroma of the cottage that hits you, and you suddenly know, and you know it. It's been with you your whole life. And it's a feeling of coming home, I would say. It's also having lived in that house all my life, that cottage. There's a million and one memories in each room of the people who are no longer with us, my mother and dad, my grandmother, back to when I was a kid. So it's maybe somewhat rare. I think I know it's rare nowadays to be so connected to one house. And in fact, last week I was at the vet up there, and as I was coming out, the ladies at the counter said, "Well, Mr. Brooks, are you still at this address?" And I said, "Yes, I am, and have been since 1895. And they kind of laughed. I said, "No, seriously, we haven't moved." And that's a bit rare. And also my sister and I were at a 4th of July party, and we realized that everyone there has been living in the same place for over 100 years. And so the same generations of our families have interacted with one another over 100 years.
We have a call. Let's bring in Jeff calling from St. Louis. Jeff, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. I wonder if Mr. Brooks could comment or compare the Pacific Missouri resort scene to the Lake Huron, and particularly like socioeconomic. It was Pacific more of a middle class thing, and were there certain sectors of the city that gravitated more towards one than the other?
Interesting. I don't know about the Missouri resort connections, except that I was speaking with a nice lady last night about Bourbon, Missouri, and she used to go down there as a young woman in the 30s and camping out. So I really don't know how to compare the two with what was going on in Michigan. If maybe did your family go down there itself, I wonder?
No, my dad talked about it, and I understand that a lot of those little houses that were vacation houses in Pacific end up, after the Depression, becoming residences.
Well, then that sounds pretty similar to what happened. Probably something similar. I imagine a fair number of St. Louis folks have cabins and cottages down out in Missouri, but
right,
something like that. You just don't have the vistas of water, but it's still an escape. It's the same thing, don't you think?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Sure.
These cottage resorts were really happening, I think you alluded to it earlier, all over the country. I think of the Catskills and the Poconos and places like that back east, where same sort of thing was going on.
That's the same thing. And again, this wide spectrum. There are very upper-class resorts like Saratoga and New York, and Virginia and West Virginia have some very fancy places. So we're not talking about that. But nevertheless, yes, all across the country, as I mentioned, how the middle class, once they got the money and the time, were looking, well, how can we escape from the city in the summer?
What was your favorite discovery? Our time is starting to get away from us. But what was your favorite discovery in going through all these old papers and documents?
Many things occur to me. One thing in particular, in the book, I have at the appendix a listing of the ways people spent their days and their nights at these resorts. So I compiled this list from the letters and from the diaries and from the newspapers because it struck me, wow, we don't do that anymore. Now in the age since television has come along, in this age of computers and now texting and whatnot, people spend so much less of their time with each other than they did in these diaries and letters that I was reading from 100 years ago. And I'm sorry about that. I think we've lost something that that we don't spend time in each other's presence. So what I did at the book, I put together a list of how they spent their time. And one way was to all the different kinds of parties. And I don't even know what some of these things were that they – what these parties were. But there was one called the Backwards Party, just to give you an example. And my great aunt Jean talks about it.
It'll have to be a quick example.
Okay. You just put your clothes on backwards. You go to the back door. You start with dessert. You serve the men first. And you have a backwards spelling bee.
All right. Well, folks can learn more about this sort of thing. I'm sorry to have to cut you short on that. Mr. Brooks will be appearing and signing books tonight at the Missouri History Museum at 7 o'clock. That information is on our website, stlpublicradio.org. You can call 314-746-4599. Douglas Scott Brooks, thanks so much for being with us. The author of Up North, St. Louis's Summer Colonies on Lake Huron in the Golden Age of Travel. It's a fun read. I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy it. Thank you so much, Doug.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with historian and author Tracy Campbell about his new book, The Gateway Arch, a biography. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.